Real families, real farms, real food. Welcome to Arizona Agriculture Connection with Maricopa County Farm Bureau. My name is Nicole Clements, Executive Director, and I'll be your host. Maricopa County Farm Bureau is the voice of agriculture in a community that thrives on the dichotomy of urban and rural agriculture operations. This podcast is a home for farmers, ranchers, food lovers, prospective agriculturalists, and those looking to connect the food on their plate with the farm that it came from. As we take an inside look at agriculture in Arizona, we will delve into topics like ag technology, policy, food preparation, and everything in between. You can find us on your favorite podcast platform with new episodes every Wednesday. Arizona Agriculture Connection is hosted by Maricopa County Farm Bureau and sponsored by Paloma Ready Mix and Materials, a proud supporter of agriculture and our communities. Be sure to subscribe and share your favorite episodes with your friends. For more interactions, follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Maricopa County FB. Now let's discover some Arizona agriculture. Welcome back, Arizona Aggies, to another edition, a very ho-ho holidays edition of Arizona Agriculture Connection. This week, I am so excited to have Amber Owens with us. She is not only a member of Maricopa County Farm Bureau, but she is on our board, and she is the chair of our Women's Leadership Committee. She's also a wife, a mother, a business owner, an advocate. So welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. That sounds like I wear a lot of hats.
I think you do. I think you wear more hats than most people, for sure. For those of you who are online and can see us, we are in one of her beautiful event space. So part of what she does is run an events company that is just beyond beautiful, and everything that you guys do is just amazing.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
If you've been to any of our events, you've probably seen her and her crew there working their tails off to make it come together. So we do appreciate everything. You're also, like I said, wife, mom. You know, what was kind of your story and how did you get to this multiple hat Amber Owens?
Well, so I grew up on this property out here in Palo Verde. So I grew up in this farming community. My parents hauled commodities growing up. So we grew up in trucks and in the fields. As I got older, they kind of transitioned out of that. And so went through 4-H, FFA, back at high school, went to U of A, majored in animal science, thought, now what am I going to do? So I married my high school sweetheart once we had to promise to graduate college before I did that. So we did that, came back to Buckeye, and really wasn't sure what I wanted to do. So I knew I loved agriculture, had a passion for it, took over my in-laws' pollen collection company. And so we had some cattle, so we continued that as well. So my husband and I have a cow-calf operation, and we do market some beef. I then started teaching, which was a surprise to those that know me. But I taught ag and helped Tonopah Valley High School start their current technical education programs. Worked as their ag teacher for a while, taught science, went into their CTE director. And then at that, I was doing both jobs. I was still trying to collect pollen for allergy medicine, raise cattle, irrigate, all of that at the same time. My husband was still working for a farm offsite. And so it just got to where it was too much, and we were at the point where, so I went to a part-time at the school and more full-time, and then gradually transitioned to full-time with our operation. And I have a sister and a brother, and so when all of us got married, we thought it would be so cool to get married here in Palo Verde on the family's property. At the time, there was still lots of remnants of the construction company, and my grandparents moved from Levine back in the 60s or 70s or whenever it was. And so it was never a reality. So I had a cousin getting married, and she rented some items and was like, we have a lot of this in our old storage container, like, you know, antique things. And then I still ended up the day of coming back in crisis mode of, we have to fill this, you know, decorate with milk cans and all of that. So we thought, oh, we should do that, because I had to go to the east side of town to pick up stuff. And if you're West Valley, East Valley, you know the whole East Valley, West Valley in the Phoenix area. So it was just kind of the seed that planted. And then a couple of years later, I had a different cousin on the other side of the family get married, and they had collected, I don't know, 150 like eclectic chairs and couches and all of that. And so that's really circled us back to that, hey, we should do this. And so after his wedding, I said, what are you going to do with all that? And he's like, I don't know, but I really want my garage back. So that's how we started. I bought all of that from him and we started collecting. Within those first few years, or first 6 months, I guess, we had a client come and say, hey, we want farm tables, but the closest ones we can find is in Las Vegas. And I was like, what do you mean this farm table? I mean, events isn't my thing. And so she told us what she wanted. So I called my grandpa and I was like, hey, Papa, I got a project. And so we built our first tables and just things just kind of snowballed from there. So we were doing lots of venue rental or item rentals offsite. And we happened to be at a new venue that was doing a big promotion. And so we had set up multiple things there. And my parents had come and they were helping. And I said, you know, we could do something so much better. And they're like, what's that? And I was like, at our place. And my dad's like, yeah, whatever. Like, you do you. He couldn't see it. And my mom's like, you think so? So we began the process of like, let's figure out how to make this work. And so lots of things had aligned. The last of my cousins on this side of the family was getting married. And so that was kind of our pitch to her, like, you want to get married here? And she's like, of course. So that gave us a deadline, right? Because we all have to have deadlines.
Yes.
So there was lots of things happened and we were able to have our first wedding here. And so then we just kind of kept that going. And so now we have a wedding venue. Ceremony's taking place in our alfalfa field and reception areas are up under an old like pole barn used to be mechanic out of. And so, yeah, we do rentals offsite. We still have our cow calves and farm a few acres of alfalfa and collect pollen for allergy medicine and raising three boys and we have our plates full.
And you're the director of the livestock show at the county fair?
So I'm the auction coordinator. I'm also one of the swine superintendents. So I think I graduated from U of A in December of 2001. And by, let's see, the 2003 county fair? Yeah, the 2003 county fair was the first year I came in as a swine coordinator. And I've been a swine coordinator in some capacity ever since. And so now I do their auction and help coordinate their release schedules and all of that. So I too wear many hats there. I prefer to stay behind the scenes and off the radar. But yes, so I do volunteer at the Maricopa County Fair. I'm the president for the Arizona Farm and Ranch Museum and Hall of Fame. I do serve on as the Maricopa County Farm Bureau Women's Leadership Chair. And with that, I sit on the State Women's Leadership Board, or committee, I guess, State Women's Leadership Committee.
Every time that I think I'm kind of tired or I'm too busy for that, I just think Amber can do it. So can I. Like, the fact that you are as involved as you are is just incredibly inspiring, first of all. I also don't know how you do it. And it's just really is truly, I think, the epitome of what being in agriculture is about, because you're never just a farmer.
Yes, yes. And, you know, it takes a great support system, even as just a farmer. You have to have a good partner, you know, a good spouse, a parents or whoever's farming with you. And so, yeah, we truly couldn't do what we do. My husband's great and supports me in all of my crazy ideas. And we homeschool our boys. And so we take them along with us in a lot of what we do. And now they're getting big enough to actually help, which is amazing. But my parents, my in-laws are all very supportive. Couldn't do it without them and my siblings and their families too. So it's really, really is a community effort. And that's what's great about agriculture, right? In our communities is even if we're in competition, when it really comes down to it, if somebody needs something, you're there and you're supporting and you're helping them however you can. And so it wouldn't be possible without the great support system that I have.
It's just a beautiful thing to see.
Yeah. Thank you.
I want to hear more about this pollen collection because that is incredibly interesting to me. So what is that? How do you do it? And then what is it used for?
Okay, so I would say in the U.S., but there's not very many of us in the world that do it. And so I don't know. It's really secretive amongst everybody. And I really don't understand why. Like I keep asking that question is why. So some of it, the plants we grow ourselves, some of them we collect off the desert or up north or wherever it may grow. And if you've ever had an allergy shot or if you take a specific allergy medicine for a specific plant, in, at least in Arizona, there's a good chance that we collected your pollen that's used to make that that serum or that pill that you're taking. So collect it off the plant. Sometimes we go hand pick the flowers. Sometimes we have a couple years ago, there was a picture of somebody wanting to know what this lady was doing, walking up and down the side of the road by some fields, vacuuming plants. And that was me. I was out there with a backpack vacuuming pollen off of a desert plant. And so I collect it, I clean it, process it, much like you would, like cotton milling, you're breaking it down, getting it to the purest form. And then we sell it to pharmaceutical companies that actually make the medicine. So we're all in the behind the scenes, early stages of it. So yeah, it's quite a process, but yeah, everybody has to, you know, hide their techniques and, you know, they got their own little recipes on what works and what doesn't and when to use it. And so it's comical sometimes, but yeah.
That's so interesting. I never thought about that even being a business.
It's like very proprietary, you know, and I'm like, I don't know. Tell me what you did and I'll tell you what I did and let's see what I can figure it out because, you know, and it was funny when my mother-in-law, she, you know, sometimes we hand sieve. And so we've got, you know, pans with sieve mesh and you shake it through and, you know, even her technique of shaking one way is different than mine. And so, yeah, one day she came in and she's like, you sieve like my dad did. And I was like, I didn't know there was a difference. And so, yeah, there's lots of things. So you and I could be doing the exact same processes. And sometimes it's very rudimentary. Like, you know, there is lots of technology out there, but we still do a lot old school ways. So, yeah.
I think that is something that, like, as we see technology getting more and more precise and economical in some cases, and you know, we see it being integrated more into agriculture, there's always going to be pieces. You're never going to be fully automated, right? But there's pieces that need a human touch.
Yes, exactly. We had a gal that we used to work with, and she said they were somewhere and she had someone ask her, what do you do? And she's like, I'm a pollen chaser, because they traveled the U.S. to collect pollens in different places. So to where we just stay pretty local solely in Arizona, but mostly down in the valley. So I was like, that's an interesting way to put it, as a pollen chaser. So yes, we chase pollen wherever it's blooming. That's where we are.
So you have like a schedule of like what should be blooming.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we're after this
week. Everything is seasonal. And so you have your small windows of collection. Sometimes you've got days, sometimes you have weeks to get it while it's blooming, and you pray that the weather cooperates and it's not windy or it's not raining or you don't get a freeze right before the blooms start to open. And so lots of those things.
That's so fascinating. We could probably sit here and I could ask you a million questions about it. Is it like a special backpack vacuum or just like
a
regular old?
I've got just a janitor's backpack one. So I'm still tethered to an extension cord and a generator, but like this year we're upgrading to actual battery powered. I think Milwaukee is the recommended, like that's the one that everybody's using because they have the best battery life. I don't know. I task my husband with figuring that out or my dad. I'm like, somebody needs to research this. I don't have time to sit and think. Just tell me what I need. So yeah, just a backpack vacuum with a hose, and we usually put a funnel on it to help suck it in, but yeah.
That's so cool. Well, kind of switching gears a little bit. So, you know, you have your family, that community that you have is really strong here. So what kind of traditions do you have? You know, you talk about sifting different ways or having different ways to go about things, but how has tradition kind of helped you progress throughout this varied many hat career that you have?
Oh, I don't know if it would be tradition, but I think for us, it's our strong faith, you know, knowing that God is in control and he will get us through, you know, it's that daily walking by faith. Agriculture is very much a faith building lifestyle because there's so many things that are out of your elements. And, you know, those years that when one of us worked outside of the home, you could always count on that paycheck or you could expect things to happen certain ways. Well, when you're in agriculture, you can't count on anything except that the animals need fed and the crops need watered. Those are definitely two certainties that we know. So I think it's definitely, you know, a big thing in my family has been our faith, to know that God will provide and you've got to give it to him and be faithful and everything you do it unto the Lord. And so that's even something with my employees, that it's like, hey, if we're going to do this, let's do it right. Let's do it once. Let's take pride in what we're doing. And our word matters, and the quality of our service. A lot of it is that strong work ethic. Again, it's not a traditional tradition per se, but I'm a very untraditional person. For those of you that know me, I don't ever do anything the way you're supposed to. So I think that that's probably two of the things that have been the biggest contributors to getting to where we are today.
I just, from being around you from the time that I've been in Arizona and, you know, have gotten to know you and spent a lot of time working side by side with you through Farm Bureau, if I need anything, I can call Amber. I know that, you know, if you say yes and you can, that you will. And I think that, which most of our people are the same way, but I think it's kind of unique. You don't have a lot of industries where you have a majority that are like that. And as someone who, you know, so this volunteer organization, you know, you guys aren't getting paid for this.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, you're donating the time, and sometimes it's a lot of time depending on, you know, the issues that are arising or what time of year it is or what we've got going on. It's a significant time investment that I ask of you guys sometimes. And knowing that you're stepping away from a business and a family, multiple businesses, stepping away from that to take the time to invest into Farm Bureau, what would you say would be the give back to you for that engagement with the organization?
I think it's securing a future, you know, a future for my kids, my nieces, my nephews, future for Arizona agriculture. It's important that we do the work and we tell our story. And whether you're the one out meeting with people and talking, or you're the one behind the scenes making the event happen, it's all important and it's all needed. So I think that's the big, it's not always that immediate feedback or, you know, immediate returns. It's our investments into the future and keeping that as the focus of, okay, those relationships when we do talk to people in the networking and getting out of our comfort zones and letting people come on to our farms and our operations, telling our stories, being there is really educating, it's advocating, it's preparing for the future, it's securing, you know, our future.
So I know this is always a question that I get asked, and you touched on it briefly, but you raise beef to sell to consumers. So if somebody wanted to buy beef from you, how would they go about that?
So we sell for custom slaughter. So we have the animal. We contract it with you before it's slaughtered. So we change ownership. It's inspected into your name. I deliver it to the processor of your choice. We have two that we usually use, but it can go anywhere. And then at that point, you now own the animal. You don't have to take it home with you live, but we'll deliver it for you to the processing. Once it's harvested, you would give the packer all of your cutting instructions. So you get to cut the meat however you like it. It's not like you go into the grocery store and you have to take what's on the shelf. And then at that point, you would pick up your meat and take it home and put it in your freezer.
Delicious.
Yes.
So let's switch gears maybe a little bit. Sure. Again, we've gone through kind of the business side of it. We're coming into the holiday season, right? Yes. So Christmas is right around the corner. Actually, when this airs, so when you guys are listening to this today, it is Christmas Eve.
Okay.
So what are your family's Christmas Eve, Christmas Day traditions?
So ours, of course, our family is very family oriented. So we do Christmas Eve with my in-laws. We've done that from when my husband and I first started dating. That actually was their tradition prior. And so, which is good because Christmas Day is full. So we do Christmas Eve with them. We have dinner, usually taco salad or something along those lines, and have dinner, hang out, do gifts, all that good stuff, and then get home and get everybody in bed for Christmas morning. Christmas morning, we wake up and we all come out to my parents' house. When, as a kid growing up, we lived on the same property as my grandparents. And so we all went to my grandparents and they did breakfast for us. And so my parents have continued that tradition. So my sister and her family and my brother and his family and my family, we've started a new tradition of we all have matching pajamas. And so we all come out in our cowboy, and they're the cowboy pajamas. And so we all come out in our cowboy pajamas and we have breakfast. And it could be simple biscuits and gravy, or it could be a big omelet buffet. And sometimes we have lots of other extended family members come, and sometimes it's just us. But I mean, when we're all together, there's 20 of us anyway. So we do breakfast with my parents. And if all the grandkids are there, we'll do our gifts then. From there, we all hustle and change clothes and grab our meals and head to my grandparents. And we do lunch there with all of my cousins and my aunts and my uncles on that side of the family. And we do a big family gift exchange, a white elephant, which is always fun for the adults. And then some of the dads doze off to nap on the couch, and some of us play games. And then we always end up back out at my parents' house for dinner. It's either ham or lots of times it's Mexican food. And so we do games and the kids watch movies and all that. So Sunday or Christmas Day is always a really long, busy day for us. But when you try and cut that stuff out, then you're missing somebody somewhere and it's just not the same. So as a kid growing up, we would do Christmas Eve at my great aunt's and with all the extended families and then all the running on Christmas. So holidays for us are always on the go, but it's great because some of my cousins, you know, you only see them at holidays. And so it's neat to see the, you know, the younger kids even get together and play.
I think it's interesting to hear from someone else. So growing up when I was a kid, I personally would attend like anywhere from 5 to 7 different family Christmas events.
Yeah.
And I thought that I was like an anomaly, that nobody else was running around doing all this crazy stuff. And they weren't all on the same day. But for like the month of December, it was just really, really hectic. And it's interesting to hear because they're like, oh, we have a relaxed Christmas day where we wake up and eat breakfast and then we relax by the fire. That was never.
No, that's never us. No. And that's part of the reason, like out at our venue, we do selfies with Santa. And it's always the first weekend of December because the holidays just get so crazy with all the things. And it's like, you don't want to not do the things, you know? But so yeah, we always have busy. My husband grew up very calm. He was an only child. And so, you know, they did Christmas Eve with the family. And then like Christmas was just chill. And then I was like, no, yep, sorry.
Throw him to the wolves.
Welcome. We don't chill for several more days.
Chill is for New Year's, maybe.
Maybe, yes. After we pit.
Yes. So, okay, so you said on Christmas Eve, you eat taco salad.
Mm-hmm.
And then breakfast, like biscuits and gravy.
Biscuits and gravy, eggs, You can't have breakfast without biscuits and gravy.
Especially on Christmas.
On Christmas, yeah. Hot chocolate, the whole thing, yeah.
The whole shebang. So I grew up raising hogs. And so we're a ham family. Even on Thanksgiving, we're not really turkey people. Yeah. We're ham people. If there's not a ham, my dad's probably not coming.
I like your dad.
I don't really enjoy turkey. Please don't hate
me. Yes, I'm
for
really
it.
Glad you didn't get me for the Thanksgiving one because I didn't eat any turkey this year at all.
I didn't either. I had beef Wellington.
Nice. Yes.
So we've always done ham and like your traditional sides and stuff. But I always love hearing about what people are eating.
Yeah, and my grandma's will have a turkey and we'll have a ham because she does it very traditional.
My aunt will do a turkey and a ham to make sure that my dad will come. But
yeah. At least he knows he's wanted.
Yeah. Lately, for the last several years, he's been cooking the ham and bringing it himself.
Oh, there you go. At least then you know you like it.
Yeah, he was trying to figure out what day we were going to do our family thing and when he needed to cook his ham, because it was not even a question. Like, we're having ham.
Yeah.
And so he's precious. But I love traditions, and especially around the holidays, it is so hectic. And I think, you know, sometimes we kind of forget why we're doing these things, but it really is about family and community. And these things are so important, not only this time of the year, or just in agriculture, but just in general. So let's hear some more traditions from more of our Maricopa County Farm Bureau membership.
My family's Christmas tradition. I would say it's probably one of the few times in the year that my extended family gets to come together. I know we typically take a drive in the mountains, check out the old family cabin. That's probably the biggest thing.
In the morning, as and before we're opening presents, we have cinnamon rolls and oranges.
That sounds delicious.
Probably going out in the woods and cutting down our own Christmas tree. It's something, there's a pine forest not too far away, so we always went down and picked out our own Christmas tree and cut it down each year to decorate. Christmas Jeopardy.
That's awesome.
Trip to the cabin.
Our Christmas tradition is Christmas Eve, we go to candle lighting at church, and then we come back for soup, and we read the Christmas story again, and we play charades. And that's really probably the most special time, just being all together at my house Christmas Eve, waiting to open up the stocking gifts. But it's a good night.
Our families in agriculture are rooted in tradition, and one that is a classic is a reading of A Christmas Story. So Amber is going to sign us off with this year's rendition of our Christmas book.
So It Was the Night Before Christmas is the book that we're reading. So 'twas the night before Christmas when all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas would soon be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mama in her kerchief, and I in my cap, had just settled down for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn arose such a clatter, I sprang to my bed to see what's the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters, and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of a new-fallen snow gave a luster of midday to objects below. When what to my wondering eyes would appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer. With a little old driver, so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles, his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen, to the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, now dash away, dash away, dash away all. As dry leaves that blew the wild hurricane fly, when they met with an obstacle, mount to the sky. So up to the housetop the coursers they flew, with a sleigh full of toys and St. Nicholas too. And then in a twinkle I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed in all fur from his head to his toe, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, oh merry. His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His drool little mouth was drawn up like a bow, or like a bow, and the beards on his chin was as white as snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke, it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk, and laying his finger aside of his nose and giving a nod up the chimney, he rose. He sprang to the sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they flew like down on a thistle. But I heard him explain as he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night."
Wonderful. Well, I hope we all have our Arizona milk and cookies out for Santa tonight, and we can expect something nice under the tree in the morning.
Yes, thank you for having me. Merry Christmas to all.
Thank you, Amber, for joining us and taking the time. We really appreciate it. And from Maricopa County Farm Bureau to you, Merry Christmas. Thank you for tuning in today, and remember, Farm Bureau has a place for you. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with your friends on socials. You can also visit our website, maricopacountyfb.org, for more information and to submit a topic you want to learn about. Remember to tune in every Wednesday wherever you listen to podcasts. A huge thank you to Paloma Ready Mix and Materials for supporting our agriculture producers and this podcast. Maricopa County Farm Bureau, bringing you the stories of real families, real farms, and real food. I'm Nicole Clements, signing off. Catch you next week.